Hello and welcome to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. True Wealth is a weekly radio program sponsored by Coins Plus. Coins Plus is located in the Clock Tower building at 3201 North Division Street in Spokane, Washington. Coins Plus is a full-service rare coin and precious metals broker-dealer engaged in the purchase and sale of precious metals, rare coins, and collections, as well as the continued purchasing of scrap gold jewelry and quality diamonds. Coins Plus also specializes in the investment guidance for those seeking wealth and capital preservation as we head into the greatest levels of economic turmoil this country has ever experienced. Whether you're looking to liquidate an old box of coins and gold jewelry that's been passed down for generations, or you want to protect your assets from the further losses as a result of a runaway debt-based economic policy, Coins Plus can help you out. Coins Plus can be reached in Spokane at 444-0044 or outside of Spokane toll-free at 1-877-TAP-COIN or 1-877-827-2646. Coins Plus has a sister company next door by the name of Clock Tower Jewelry, whose entire existence was created to offer the absolute best pricing available anywhere to the buyers and sellers of diamonds, gold jewelry, or scrap gold. If you are in the market for a nice quality diamond as a gift or investment, make sure you come and visit Clock Tower Jewelry. You will not find a better quality at a better price. We guarantee it. We sell diamonds wholesale to the public, which is truly unheard of anywhere else. The lowest internet diamond sellers are still 30 to 50% higher than Clock Tower Jewelry. Coins Plus is also proud to offer the highest rated private safe depository service in the region as an exclusive service to our investment clientele. We have unfortunately rented all of our smallest boxes and we're running low on the next size up. So if you've been thinking of acquiring a safe deposit box from Coins Plus, you might want to secure one now before it's too late. The level of security precautions engineered into the Coins Plus facility is second to none, and the ever-changing state of affairs locally, nationally, and globally continue to pose a greater and greater risk to your privacy, safety, and security each and every day. There has been no more serious a time in our lifetime to protect and preserve our assets from the impending, imminent, and irrefutable economic downturn that lies ahead. The government's creation of infinite quantities of monopoly money from thin air is guaranteeing only one result. Prepare yourself now before it's too late. Call Coins Plus today at 444-0044 in Spokane to convert your paper assets to timeless, biblically endorsed, and authorized hard money. Gold and silver are the only true money that have survived from the beginning of written human history until now and will now, as much as ever, sustain you through the very trying economic times ahead. I'd like to get right into the show this week. The show this week is inspired by a video I watched online called Zeitgeist Part 3. So if you're interested in kind of seeing where I'm coming from, go on Google Videos or something like that. Look for Zeitgeist Part 3. The Part 3 is critical. I guess Part 1 and 2 is completely unrelated. I'm not sure what it's about, and I'm not sure I even support it or what. But Zeitgeist Part 3 is where I got a lot of this information. I took a lot of notes. I added ad-libbed a ton. I added my own opinions. I added my own quotes. So there may be some parallels in here. I don't know. But I can tell you that this is pretty much written by me. And so I thought it was wonderful information. I think you guys are going to enjoy it. And I'll start out by reading a couple quotes. One quote is, "The world is governed by very different persons from what is imagined by those who are not behind the scenes." The second quote is, "The real truth of the matter is that a financial element in the large centers has owned the government since the days of Andrew Jackson." I unfortunately didn't write down who those quotes were from, but they were good. In 1775, the American Revolutionary War began as the American colonies sought to detach from England and its oppressive monarchy. Although many reasons are cited for the revolution, one in particular sticks out as the prime cause, that King George III in England outlawed the interest-free independent currency the colonies were producing, colonial currency, and using it for themselves, in turn forcing them to borrow money from the Central Bank of England at interest, immediately putting the colonies into debt. As Benjamin Franklin later wrote, "The refusal of King George III to allow the colonies to operate an honest money system which freed the ordinary man from the clutches of the money manipulators was probably the prime cause of the revolution." In 1783, America won its independence from England. However, its battle against the central bank concept and the corrupt, greed-filled men associated with it had just begun. So what is a central bank? A central bank is an institution that produces the currency of an entire nation. Based on historical precedent, two specific powers are inherent in central banking practice: the control of interest rates and the control of the money supply, or what we refer to as inflation. A central bank does not simply supply a government's economy with money. It loans it to them at interest. Then, through the use of increasing and decreasing the supply of money, the central bank regulates the value of the currency being issued. It is critical to understand that the entire structure of this system can only produce one thing in the long run: debt. It doesn't take a lot of ingenuity to figure this scam out, for if every single dollar is produced by the central bank, that means every single dollar produced is actually the dollar plus a certain percent of debt based on that dollar. And since a central bank has a monopoly over the production of the currency for the entire country, and they loan each dollar out with immediate debt attached to it, where does the money to pay for the debt come from? It can only come from the central bank again, which means the central bank has to perpetually increase its money supply to temporarily cover the outstanding debt created. In turn, since that new money is loaned out at interest as well, creates even more debt. The end result of this system, without fail, is slavery. For it is impossible for the government, and thus the public, to ever come out of this self-generating debt. The founding fathers of this country were well aware of this. To quote Thomas Jefferson, "I believe that banking institutions are more dangerous than standing armies. If the American people ever allow private banks to control the issue of currency, the banks and corporations that will grow up around them will deprive the people of their property until their children wake up homeless on the continent their fathers conquered." Thomas Jefferson. And to quote Sir Josiah Stamp, Baron of England, after the creation of the Federal Reserve Act, quote, "Banking was conceived in iniquity and was born in sin. The bankers own the earth. Take it away from them, but leave them the power to create money, and with the flick of the pen they will create enough deposits to buy it back again. However, take it away from them, and all the great fortunes like mine will disappear, and they ought to disappear, for this would be a happier and better world to live in. But if you wish to remain the slaves of bankers and pay the cost of your own slavery, let them continue to create money and control the nation's credit." Sir Josiah Stamp. By the early 20th century, the U.S. had already implemented and removed a few central banking systems, which were swindled into place by ruthless banking interests. At this time, the dominant families in the banking and business world were the Rockefellers, the Morgans, the Warburgs, and the Rothschilds, among others. And in the early 1900s, they sought to push, once again, legislation to create another central bank. However, they knew the government and public were weary of such an institution, so they needed to create an incident to affect public opinion. So J.P. Morgan, publicly considered a financial luminary at the time, exploited his mass influence by publishing rumors that a prominent bank in New York was insolvent or bankrupt. Morgan knew this would cause mass hysteria, which would affect other banks as well, and it did. The public, in fear of losing their deposits, immediately began mass withdrawals. Consequently, the banks were forced to call in their loans, causing the recipients to sell their products, and thus a spiral of bankruptcies, repossessions, and turmoil emerged. Putting the pieces together a few years later, Frederick Allen of Life magazine wrote, "The Morgan interest took advantage to precipitate the panic of 1907, guiding it shrewdly as it progressed. Unaware of the fraud, the panic of 1907 led to a congressional investigation headed by Senator Nelson Aldrich, who had intimate ties to the banking cartels and later became part of the Rockefeller family through marriage. The commission, headed up by Nelson Aldrich, a covert banking cartel insider himself, recommended a central bank should be implemented so a panic like 1907 could never happen again. This was the spark the international bankers needed to initiate their plan. In 1910, a secret meeting was held at the J.P. Morgan estate on Jekyll Island, off the coast of Georgia. It was there that the central banking bill called the Federal Reserve Act was written. This legislation was written by bankers, not lawmakers. This meeting was so secretive, so concealed from the government and public knowledge, that the 10 or so figures who attended were told they could only use their first names in addressing each other in case any word got out. After this bill was constructed, it was then handed over to the political frontman, Senator Nelson Aldrich, to push through Congress. And in 1913, with heavy political sponsorship by the bankers, Woodrow Wilson became president, having already agreed to sign the Federal Reserve Act in exchange for campaign support. And 2 days before Christmas, when most of Congress was at home with their families, the Federal Reserve Act was voted in, and Wilson in turn made it law. Years later, Woodrow Wilson wrote in regret, "Our great industrial nation is controlled by its system of credit. Our system of credit is privately concentrated. The growth of the nation, therefore, and all our activities are in the hands of a few men who, even if their action be honest and intended for the public interest, are necessarily concentrated upon the great undertakings in which their own money is involved, and who necessarily, by very reason of their own limitations, chill and check and destroy genuine economic freedom. We have come to be one of the worst ruled, one of the most completely controlled and dominated governments in the civilized world. No longer a government by free opinion, no longer a government by conviction and the vote of the majority, but a government by the opinion and the duress of small groups of dominant men." This is a Woodrow Wilson, President of the United States. Congressman Lewis McFadden also expressed the truth after the passage of the bill. He said, quote, "A world banking system was being set up here, a super state controlled by international bankers acting together to enslave the world for their own pleasure. The Fed has usurped the government." Now, that's the end of the quote. Now the public was told that the Federal Reserve System was an economic stabilizer, and inflation and economic crises were a thing of the past. Well, as history has shown, nothing is further from the truth. The fact is, the international bankers now had a streamlined machine to expand their personal ambitions. For example, from 1914 to 1919, the Fed increased the money supply by nearly 100%, resulting in extensive loans to small banks. Then in 1920, the Fed called in massive percentages of the outstanding money supply, thus resulting in the supporting banks having to call in huge numbers of loans. And just like in 1907, bank runs, bankruptcy, and collapse occurred. Over 5,400 competitive banks outside of the Federal Reserve System collapsed, further consolidating the monopoly to a small group of international bankers. And folks, we're seeing this take place all over again today. Aware of the historical crime that had been committed, Congressman Lindbergh stepped up and said in 1929 or 1921, quote, "Under the Federal Reserve Act, panics are scientifically created. The present panic is the first scientifically created one, worked out as we figure a mathematical equation. However, the panic of 1920 was just a warm-up. From 1921 to 1929, the Fed again increased the money supply, resulting once again in extensive loans to the public and banks. There was also a fairly new type of loan called a margin loan in the stock market. Very simply, a margin loan allowed the investor to put down only 10% of a stock's price, with the other 90% being loaned through the broker. In other words, a person could own $1,000 worth of stock with only $100 down. This method was very popular in the roaring 20s, as everyone seemed to be making money in the market. However, there was a catch to this loan. It could be called in at any time and had to be paid within 24 hours. This is termed a margin call, and the typical result of a margin call is the selling of the stock purchased with the loan. Just days before the great stock market crash in October 1929, John D. Rockefeller, Bernard Baruch, J.P. Morgan, the Kennedy family, and other insiders quietly exited the market and moved their money into gold. On October 24th of 1929, the New York financiers who furnished the margin loans started calling them in mass. Now notice, folks, All the powers that be moved into gold before the big collapse came. This sparked an instantaneous massive sell-off in the market, for everyone had to cover their margin loans. It then triggered mass bank runs for the same reason, in turn collapsing over 16,000 banks, enabling the conspiring international bankers to not only use their gold holdings to buy up rival banks at a discount, but they also used the gold to buy up whole corporations, city blocks, and in some cases, entire cities for fractions of pennies on the dollar using their gold. It was the greatest robbery in American history, but that did not stop there. Rather than expand the money supply to recover from this economic collapse, the Fed actually contracted it, strengthening the dollar and increasing the buying power of gold while making the dollar more and more difficult to acquire, ultimately fueling one of the largest depressions in the written world history. Once again outraged, Congressman Lewis McFadden, a longtime opponent of the banking cartel, began bringing impeachment proceedings against the Federal Reserve Board, saying of the crash and depression, quote, "It was a carefully contrived occurrence. International bankers sought to bring about a condition of despair so that they might emerge the rulers of all." Not surprisingly, and after two previous assassination attempts, McFadden was poisoned at a banquet before he could push for the impeachment. Wow. Now, having reduced the society to squalor, the Federal Reserve bankers, desiring to remove any of the remaining free market competition, decided that the gold standard should be removed. In order to do this, they needed to acquire the remaining gold in the system. So, under the pretense of helping to end the depression, came the 1933 gold confiscation we have all heard much about. Under threat of imprisonment for 10 years, everyone in America was required to turn in all gold bullion to the Treasury, essentially robbing the public of what little wealth they had. At the end of 1933, the gold standard was abolished. If you look at a dollar bill from before 1933, it says it's redeemable in gold. If you look at a dollar bill today, it says it's legal tender, which means it's backed by absolutely nothing. It's worthless paper. Because FDR was a coin and stamp collector, there was a small loophole left in the executive order used to confiscate gold. Any previously minted U.S. gold coins that were held for collection purposes were exempt from confiscation. Since the executive order took place in 1933, all U.S. gold coins with a legal tender face value dated prior to 1933 were exempt from confiscation. Many investors today prefer these pre-1933 U.S. quote, semi-numismatic coins for investing, as they're technically exempt should the previous form of confiscation be reinstituted. Another way to look at it is the only thing that was exempt from confiscation was U.S. issued legal tender gold coinage. So the American Gold Eagles and the American Gold Buffaloes, if they confiscated again and used the same standards but just changed the date, they would exempt the eagle and the buffalo. However, at that time we were on a gold standard. We are no longer on a gold standard. The gold standard hypothetically gave our government a legal claim to all gold on U.S. soil, which they used to leverage the confiscation. We're no longer on a gold standard. They no longer have a legal claim to all gold on U.S. soil. If we did see a physical confiscation, it would very potentially be Naziistic and very militaristic. And not to mention the fact, although it is possible to have something like that happen and have the American people just stand by and say nothing, because that seems to be what we've become. I compare it a lot to Sodom and Gomorrah. In Sodom and Gomorrah, there was one good man left, Lot. And quite frankly, he was a half of a good man. He was willing to give his daughters up to evil, basically. In lieu of homosexual acts being performed on these angels. He had sold himself out, folks. He was days from being done for good, very possibly. And so the moral of the story to me is a negative, corrupt society eventually corrupts everyone. A recent study says that only 4% of high school children now consider themselves born-again believers. 4%. You go back in time, in the 80s it was, I think, 38%, and in the 60s it was like 67%. We've lost a whole generation, if not more. We're going in the way of Great Britain. Folks, this is serious stuff. By the way, obviously the point of all this is leading up to where we're heading into more economic chaos, and we recommend having all your paper assets, all of them, in hard precious metals, gold and silver. Give Coins Plus a call at 444-0044 in Spokane. Outside of Spokane, toll-free, 1-877-TAP-COIN or 1-877-827-2646. The only thing that gives our money value now is how much of it is in circulation. Therefore, the power to regulate the money supply is also the power to regulate its value, which is also the power to bring entire economies and societies to their knees. As M.A. Rothschilds, the founder of the Rothschilds banking dynasty, has been quoted as saying, quote, "Give me control of a nation's money supply, and I care not who makes its laws." It's important to clearly understand the Federal Reserve is a private corporation. It's about as Federal Express. It makes its own policies, and it's under virtually no regulation by the U.S. government. It is a private bank that loans all currency at interest to the government, completely consistent with the fraudulent central banking model that the country sought to escape from when it declared independence in the American Revolutionary War. Now, going back to 1913, the Federal Reserve Act was not the only unconstitutional bill pushed through Congress. They also pushed the federal income tax. It's worthwhile to point out that the American public's ignorance towards the federal income tax is a testament to how dumbed down and oblivious the American population really is. First of all, the federal income tax is completely unconstitutional, as it is a direct, unapportioned, or discriminatory tax. All direct taxes have to be apportioned to be legal based on the Constitution. In other words, everyone must pay equally based on the population of a city or state, like cutting up a pie. Everyone should have equal responsibility. Not only is the income tax unapportioned or unevenly distributed, it is also a progressive tax which punishes the risk takers and producers of this nation. The better you succeed, the higher percentage you owe. Secondly, the required number of states in order to ratify the amendment to allow the income tax was never met, and this has been cited in modern court cases. Third, at the present day, roughly one-third of the average worker's income is taken from them through federal income tax. Not to mention that another third of all income is taken through taxation that has been figured into the cost of goods purchased and consumed. That means you work 4 months out of the year to fulfill your federal income tax obligation and another 4 months of the year to fulfill the tax obligations of those providing the goods and services that you consume. 8 months of your work per year is spent on federal taxation. Guess where all that money goes? It goes to pay the interest on the currency being produced by the fraudulent Federal Reserve Bank, a system that does not have to exist at all. The money you make working 8 months out of the year goes almost literally into the pockets of the international bankers who own the private Federal Reserve Bank. And fourth, even with the fraudulent government claim as to the legality of the income tax, there is literally no statute, no law in existence that requires you to pay this tax, period. A quote from one previous IRS agent who spent too much time seeking the truth. Quote, "I really expected that of course there's a law that you can point to in the law book that requires you to file a tax return. Of course there is. I was at the point where I couldn't find the statute that clearly made a person liable, at least not me, and most people I know, and I had no choice in my mind except to resign. I haven't filed a federal income tax return since I left." Another previous IRS agent is quoted as saying, quote, "Based on the research that I did through the year 2000, and I'm still doing, I have not found that law. I've asked Congress, a lot of people, we've asked the IRS commissioners, helpers, they can't answer, because if they answer, the American people are going to know that the whole thing is a fraud. I have not filed a tax return since 1999. The income tax is nothing less than the enslavement of the entire country. Now, the control of the economy and the perpetual robbery of wealth is only one side of the Rubik's Cube the bankers hold in their hands. The next tool for profit and control is war. Since the inception of the Federal Reserve in 1913, a number of large and small wars have commenced. The three most pronounced were World War I, World War II, and Vietnam." Now, I'd like to touch above. Christ did not call us to be tax protesters. He said, "Render unto Caesar what's Caesar's." The only debate is we're constitutionally bound to a certain set of taxes. The taxes that were put into place after this are not constitutional. So it depends on where you lean morally. I personally pay income tax. That's where I'm at. But I can tell you there's some people that believe that the Constitution is a divinely inspired document. What it says goes, and what they've done since is in breach of the Constitution. And even though they have the strong upper hand, there's people that debate it. There's people that debate how much do you pay, etc. I'm not getting into that. I'm just reading you facts. World War One. In 1914, European wars broke out centered around England and Germany. The American public wanted nothing to do with the war. In turn, President Wilson publicly declared neutrality. However, under the surface, the U.S. administration was looking for any excuse they could find to enter the war. In a noted observation by Secretary of State William Jennings, the large banking interests were deeply interested in the World War because of the wide opportunities for large profits. It's important to understand that the most lucrative thing that can happen for international bankers is war, for it forces the country to borrow even more money from the Federal Reserve Bank at interest. Woodrow Wilson's top advisor and mentor was Colonel Edward House, a man with intimate connections with the international bankers who wanted us in the war. In a documented conversation between Colonel House, Wilson's advisor, and Sir Edward Grey, the Foreign Secretary of England, regarding how to get America into the war, Grey inquired, "What will Americans do if Germans sink an ocean liner with American passengers on board?" House responded, "I believe that a flame of indignation would sweep the United States, and that by itself would be sufficient to carry us into war." So, on May 7th, 1915, on essentially the suggestion of Sir Edward Grey, a ship called the Lusitania was deliberately sent into German-controlled waters where German military vessels were known to be, and, as expected, German U-boats torpedoed the ship, exploding stored ammunition, killing 1,200 people. To further understand the deliberate nature of this setup, the German embassy actually put advertisements in the New York Times telling people that if they boarded the Lusitania, they did so at their own risk, as such a ship sailing from America to England through the war zone would be liable to destruction. In turn, and as anticipated, the sinking of the Lusitania caused a wave of anger among the American population, and America entered the war a short time after. The First World War caused 323,000 American deaths. J.D. Rockefeller made about $200 million off of it. That's about $3 billion by today's standards, not to mention the war cost about $30 billion for Americans, most of which was borrowed from the Federal Reserve Bank at interest, furthering the profits of the international bankers. Now, I've explained what they do to get into war, to generate income and to gain control. If you watch, if you go online, spend the time, if you're an American and you don't, I'm ashamed of you, go online and watch the video. Number one, Loose Change, or watch 911 Mysteries, watch Loose Change. Watch those two videos, 911 Mysteries and Loose Change, to understand what's going on. Next week, I'm going to pick up on World War II. We'll continue the show. Thanks for tuning in. I hope you find it interesting. Give Coins Plus a call at 444-0044 in Spokane, outside Spokane, toll free, 1-877-TAP-COIN, or 1-877-827-2646. I just want to thank you again for tuning in. I thank you for the loyal listeners. I thank you for all the compliments I've gotten on the show. I can't believe that it's that good. We just really sincerely appreciate your input and support, and we appreciate your business. We feel like you're a family. We feel that this is a ministry. We want to serve you. We want to serve God's people. We want to get God's money into the hands of God's people. And it's important to us that we preserve your capital, because I think it's an inevitable fact that we're heading into the most unique times in history, in the most unique country in history. Once again, take care. God bless. Have a fantastic week.